Hi, welcome back to Legends of Surgery. I'm your host, Tyler Rouse. Today will be the first edition in a series on surgical instruments. Maybe you've been in the OR and heard the names of instruments being asked for like Kelly, Coker, Metzenbaums, Alice, etc. Have you ever wondered about the people behind the names? Well, this series will explore the history of the instruments and the people behind the eponym. The series' first subject, William T. Bovey. One of the most commonly used surgical instruments is the electrosurgical device, which for those that aren't familiar is an instrument that uses an electrical current to either cut through or coagulate tissue. Although it is so commonplace as to be an afterthought, the ability to cut tissue and stop bleeding with an electrical current was revolutionary and allowed for otherwise impossible procedures to be tackled by pioneering surgeons. This instrument is typically referred to as the Bovey, but it wasn't named after one of these innovative doctors, although one made it famous and we'll get to that, but rather after an eccentric inventor named William T. Bovey. Before we get into Bovey's story, we should set the table to understand how electricity and surgery came to be acquainted. This is a huge topic, so forgive me for only skimming the surface. The era of electrophysiology began in the 1700s by Luigi Galvani, origin of the word galvanizing, and Count Alessandro Volta, birth of the word volt, who showed that a direct electrical current could cause muscle contractions in frogs. Morton and Darsenval in the late 1800s discovered that sufficiently high alternating current can pass through tissues without producing any physiological effects like pain or muscle twitching, but does heat tissues. This was the birth of diathermy, which means electrically induced heat, and electrosurgery. The first is diffused over a large area with minimal temperature rise. The second is more focused and high-powered. Many improvements were made so that by 1910 the essential features of electrosurgery were understood and were being applied to not only superficial skin lesions, but things like hemorrhoids and tumors of the bladder, breast, cervix, tongue, and throat. However, this was still in the experimental phase, and there were very few commercially available units. The bottom line is that Bovey was not exactly working in a vacuum. In fact, it was his refinement of the instrumentation and his partnership with the famous Dr. Harvey Cushing that launched electrosurgery and Bovey himself into fame. But first, who was Bovey? Born September 11, 1882 in Michigan, William T. Bovey grew up in what some articles describe as an idyllic rural environment. His father was a doctor, but he was far more interested in tinkering with devices. Bovey followed a somewhat wandering educational and employment track record, which certainly reflects the descriptions of him as brilliant but unfocused, and eventually earned a PhD in plant physiology from Harvard, where he stayed on to work at the Harvard Cancer Commission. The focus there was on the use of the newly discovered radium on the treatment of cancer, and Bovey himself would suffer from chronic radiation damage to his hands later in life, but Bovey's interest started to lean towards electrosurgical devices. As I mentioned, some work had already been done, but their applications were limited. Bovey's interests in furthering this work were not commercial, as we'll see later, and not even purely clinical, but rather in the physical properties of electricity on tissues. What Bovey was interested in were the effects of different alternating currents on tissues. In a side note in Cushing's paper on this, he states that Bovey, quote, was led to take an interest in the subject purely on account of the biophysical principles involved in getting an answer to the question of why an alternating current of one type can separate the tissues as though they were actually cut, while another will merely coagulate them and cannot be used for cutting, end quote. In fact, in the intro of that same paper, Bovey separated these effects into three types: superficial dehydration, which is sort of like a spray setting, cutting, and tissue coagulation. Bovey has been described as the figure that united biology and physics, and has even been famously quoted as saying, quote, I have an idea that there is a field between physics and biology, a field that should be known as biophysics, end quote. In fact, Harvard obliged him by appointing him assistant professor of biophysics in 1920, a position he held until 1927, and this is the crucial time in our story. Dr. Harvey Cushing, considered one of the founders of modern neurosurgery, was working at the newly built Peter Bent Brigham Hospital in Boston at this time. We'll circle back to him in a later podcast, as he's a fascinating character in himself. But first, let's set the stage. So in the 1920s, in most areas of surgery, the controlling of bleeding, aka hemostasis, was limited to things like clamping and tying off vessels, so-called Halstedian technique, after William Halsted, bone wax, and clips, which Cushing himself actually invented in 1911. This limited what surgeons could do, particularly in difficult-to-reach areas or lesions that were very vascular. Cushing was very well aware of and very frustrated by this limitation. And this leads us to the main event. So in late 1926, Cushing had a patient, a 64-year-old papermaker, with a slowly enlarging mass on the right side of his head. I'll put a picture up on Twitter so you can see what this thing looked like. On September 28th, he tried to resect it, only to fail due to the lesion's vascularity. Then Cushing had his eureka moment. First, quickly, there's an anecdote that keeps popping up in all these sources, and I don't know how important it is, but I'll tell you. It's kind of strange, so here's the quick recap. So in June of 1925, Cushing was at the American Medical Association meeting in Atlantic City. There was a demonstration of a desiccating and cutting diathermy machine on a block of beef. Cushing's colleagues jokingly suggested, quote, "Here's something you ought to use on the brain," end quote. I guess they thought this was funny because of how crude the operating machine was. Reports from this event suggest the idea resonated with Cushing and maybe it percolated in his mind. Anyways, Bovey describes Cushing making the connection, quote, "Dr. Cushing attended a staff meeting at the cancer hospital and heard a report of the progress we had made in electrosurgery, and one day soon afterwards he popped his head into my laboratory at Harvard and asked me if I thought we could prevent some loss of blood in a brain operation. And I said I wasn't sure, but perhaps we could," end quote. So as one source describes, Bovey brought his desk-sized device to Brigham by rolling it down the street from his lab in Huntington on a handcart. The OR had to be re-outfitted to handle the electrical requirements, and I've never seen mention of any concerns about sterility. Regardless, on October 1st, 1926, the very first Bovey unit was used on a patient. Here are Dr. Cushing's notes on the event. Quote, "This operation was a perfect circus, many ringed. The New England Surgical Association were here, and almost every hand was occupied with them. I had persuaded Dr. Bovey to bring his diathermy apparatus over here to let me see what I could do with his cutting loop. This had necessitated re-electrifying the operating room. Dr. Greena appeared with four or five coughing Frenchmen with colds in their head. The student who was acting as a possible blood donor fainted and fell off the seat. It was a little too much for Davidoff's successor, who'd only been here 2 or 3 days, so that I finally called in Horax. The patient, what is more, began to show a marked falling off in red blood cells and hemoglobin, which had progressively dropped from his primary operation to this morning. In spite of all this, and more, things went surprisingly well. Then, with Dr. Bowie's help, I proceeded to take off most satisfactorily the remaining portion of tumor, with practically none of the bleeding which had occasioned in the preceding operation. The loop acted perfectly, and blood stilling was almost complete. But whether we would venture to use anything of this kind in the brain tissue itself, I'm at a loss to know, because almost certainly it would cause convulsions," end quote. As an aside, this patient actually underwent a third procedure and survived for another 4 months, later dying of acute nephritis. At that time, there was no evidence of tumor recurrence. So Cushing did go on to use the device in a number of different types of tumors, some of which he outlined in a case series with the intro by Bovey entitled, quote, "Electrosurgery as an Aid to the Removal of Intracranial Tumors," end quote, published in Surgery, Gynecology, and Obstetrics, now known as the Journal of the American College of Surgeons, in December of 1928. First, it was nearly impossible to get hold of this paper, since online records don't go back that far. I had to go deep into the bowels of my local medical sciences library, and I was again struck at the writing style from back then. This article comes in at 34 pages and reads like a diary in some parts. But there are definitely some interesting tidbits, some of which I've already mentioned. Another is that the original instrument had a pistol grip and looked a lot like some present-day laparoscopic instruments. Throughout the case series, Cushing discusses improvements to the instrument, adding a foot pedal control, and considering having keys on the handle of the pistol grip. This was rejected, and instead, he moved to use the electrode as a pencil. Here's Cushing's reasoning, quote, "One need only attempt to write his signature with a pencil inserted in the muzzle of a revolver to appreciate the difference," end quote. Good point, pun intended. They also used both a wire loop and a ball electrode. Again, for those working in ORs, most of these things should sound pretty familiar. It's amazing how much the innovative changes that we still use today. However, it wasn't all smooth sailing. In one case, Cushing describes how a small opening was made in the frontal sinus, leading to a direct communication between the respiratory passages and the field of operation. Here's what happened, quote, "Suddenly the ether vapor was sparked and went off in a blue flame, fortunately without any injurious effects. The experience, however, was sufficiently disconcerting to lead us for a time to substitute for inhalation narcosis the rectal administration of ether to tide patients when necessary over the more uncomfortable period of a prolonged session," end quote. Fortunately, this was a short-lived solution. And here's another mishap. Quote, "Once the operator received a shock which passed through a metal retractor to his arm and out by the wire from his headlight, which was unpleasant to say the least," end quote. But they persevered, and Cushing made a point in the article to thank Dr. Bovey for his, quote, "sacrifice of time in personally attending a great number of the many prolonged operative sessions during the first 6 months of our use of the apparatus," end quote. Cushing went on to remove over 500 tumors, some of which had previously been considered inoperable. However, by 1927, Bovey's research funding ran out and he moved on, bouncing around until finally settling at Colby College in Fairfield, Maine, where he was a popular, if odd, professor, often hosting students in the evenings and keeping a room full of his inventions. Although he received many accolades and awards during his lifetime for his invention, he and his wife lived a humble life, as Bovey had sold his original patent for his electrosurgery machine, and this is true, for $1.19, and he never made any profit from it. In fact, friends and family had to chip in to pay for his funeral after his death on New Year's Day in 1958. However, his name is now not only a noun, as in pass me the Bovey, but a verb. Can you Bovey that bleeder? So remember, if you're in an operating room and you are connecting the Bovey, you're also connecting with history. I'll end with the final words from Dr. Cushing's paper, as it puts this historical advance in the light of other surgical advances. Quote, "Surgery is a conservative art. It takes to novel methods reluctantly as an old dog to new tricks. It was slow to adopt the ligature, slow to adopt the principles of antisepsis, slow to adopt the fastidious technique of painstaking hemostasis that have largely put a stop to operating by the clock. It has been equally slow to adopt the principles of electrosurgery, which, from a technical standpoint, are likely to be no less revolutionizing." End quote. Well, that wraps up another episode of Legends of Surgery. Please join us next week when we have our special St. Patrick's Day edition, where we'll be covering the Irish surgeon, Dennis Parsons Burkitt. Please rate the podcast on iTunes, leave a comment there. You can follow me on Twitter at Surgery Legends. Like us on Facebook at Legends of Surgery, or send an email to legendsofsurgery@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you about your thoughts on the podcast or ideas for future episodes, and as always, thanks for listening.